السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Good evening, خيانانت مويني, and a hearty welcome to the Shahida Kali Show. So of course tonight we again continue with our series that looks at justice, fairness, you know, mercy, forgiveness, love, appreciation. At this time we will be talking about and focus on gender injustices or gender justice, gender violence, the consequences thereof, etc. And we will be speaking about it over two programs. So in the studio with me is Patrick Godana, who is in a position as Mencare Government and Media Manager, and he is with the organization called Gender Justice. Patrick, good evening and welcome to the program.
Good evening to you and thanks for having me. Good evening to the listeners, wherever they are.
I appreciate that you will come in at this time because this is supposed to be family time. So a special thank you.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you so much. So Patrick, I think we'd like to start off by asking you to tell us a little bit about the organization called Gender Justice.
Thank you. The organization, by the way, is called Sonke.
Okay.
Gender Justice.
Mm-hmm.
The name Sonke is a Nguni term meaning together.
Okay.
Alma. All those who believe in gender justice, in the framework of human rights, we are together for this journey towards gender justice. So Sonke Gender Justice was established in Cape Town in the year 2006. And I remember at the time the Premier was Premier Rasool, the first ever Premier of the Western Cape. At a point in time, we were called by the provincial government to come up with a series of calendar for 16 days of no violence against women. And it was the birth of our first ever campaign, the one that says one man can. The history around Sonke Gender Justice, it was designed as an organization that will engage men and boys in relation to women so as to bring about a healthy society, an equitable society, a society where all citizens are seen as human beings and less of human beings.
Mm-hmm.
It is in line with the vision of the country and the aspiration and the dream of our own country, a non-sexist, democratic South Africa. And we want to say, we want to make sure that we make a healthy society.
That's wonderful. So just a question, please, Patrick. When you're saying, you know, you're particularly, and really I like this one man can, that is just amazing. And one almost hears the man in that line, one man can, as non-gendered. So that one man can could be a woman or a man.
Let me qualify this once more or explain it further.
Mm-hmm.
I said initially, our niche was to reach out to men.
To men, yes.
And boys.
Mm-hmm.
That was the initial phase of Sonke.
Yeah.
And since then we evolved. Mm-hmm. We've just celebrated our 10th year anniversary as an organization. But the truth of the matter is, you are right. Sonke is made up of men and women who love gender justice and who strive for gender justice. The idea back in the days, because remember, men see the issue of gender as a woman's thing and a woman's prerogative.
Mm-hmm.
But also, men are absent in the field of sexual and reproductive health and rights. And that on its own, we needed to have a strategy. How do we reach out to men? And by the way, the formation of the campaign One Man Can, it came just after the two major conferences in the globe that were looking at the plight of women. You remember the conference in 1996 in Accra, Ghana, the conference in same year in Beijing, looking at the plight of women across the globe.
Yes.
But we sat down as men and young men to say, what is it that we can do in response of that conference in terms of making sure that the emancipation of women in our country is being realized? And this campaign came to the fore. And it was the birth of this campaign.
And so, and thank you so much for that, Patrick. We spoke a little bit about what the organization is all about. I want to continue that conversation. But you know what? I'm almost starting to think, oh no, we shouldn't only have 2 weeks. We should at least have 4 weeks with
sure.
you, Esmond. You know, because you spoke so much about your own experience. And that informs, I think that would be so similar or a shared experience with many men. Because my questions I'd like to ask is how many men really are involved in gender justice and ensuring that gender justice prevails. Let's come back to when you're looking at Sonke Gender Justice and you're looking at your slogan of one man can, do we look at an organization that is mainly run by and their membership will hold mostly men and the boy child?
Well, as I've said initially that when we started the organization was around equality, but our niche was to focus on men and boys in relation to women. And in those spaces where we were doing engagement with men and boys, there was the presence of women.
Mm-hmm.
But as the time evolved, we then said to ourselves, we are looking for a democratic, non-sexist country.
Yes.
And we are now having a different discourse altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And our workshop training spaces are more women than men.
Mm-hmm.
And we are having in our ranks a number of men that are actually subscribing to the ideals of Sonke. But also, if one speaks about the composition of the organization at this standing point in time, 10 years down the line, 60% to 65% of our own staff at Sonke are women.
Okay.
Remember, Sonke is having an office space in Cape Town, Johannesburg, and in Bushbuck Ridge.
Mm-hmm.
And very soon we'll be opening an office in the Eastern Cape. That's what I'm actually navigating in the Eastern Cape.
Yes.
But we've got huge presence of the many Sonke community action teams in the Eastern Cape as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
Because we believe that for us to be able to have legitimacy, communities are important.
Yeah.
And our own membership base must come from the communities.
Yeah.
Our constituency is the community.
So I just want to go back to that.
Sure.
Now, when there are, of course, thousands of men listening at the moment and, you know, boy children and even adolescent and young adult boys, I'd like to ask you about your personal journey, if I may, if you allow me to. So the question I'd like to ask is, Patrick, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and you are yourself actually still a young man, were you kind of finding yourself in a gender justice mindset, perhaps? And I'll tell you why I'm asking the question.
Sure.
Because I think your journey and your evolvement could be such an inspiration to a young man who's listening at the moment who might not even think he can ever be and feel differently and look differently upon certain aspects. Here you are, you know, one of the people standing up for gender justice. Let's just hear where you came from.
Thank you for the question. You know, I dare not to speak about my personal journey in this work that I'm doing.
Yeah.
And in fact, I always perceive it as a second phase of my struggle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no angel. I'm born in the dusty street of Port Elizabeth, New Brighton to be precise. I take the other comments as a compliment. Many years ago, you know, because in 1982, I left the country. Lesotho, then ultimately to Ndola in Zambia.
Mm-hmm.
Trained as a military member from Kondo Wesizwe. But upon my coming back in the country mid-80s, 1985, to be precise, in June, we were shot at and we were ultimately arrested you know, and charged for serious crime treason trial, and we were sent to maximum prison.
Mm-hmm.
But we had all the hope of a free and a just South Africa. But that on its own, you know, my very background was never a fair one.
Mm-hmm.
Hence, I participated in issues of ending apartheid system at my early age, tender age.
Yeah.
16 and a half, you know, when I left the country. And again, if I look back in those early years of my life at the home front.
Yes.
You know, I always loved my father, loved my mother. But the scars that I'm having,
yeah,
thanks to the work that I'm doing, thanks to the field of study that I've actually embarked upon,
mm-hmm,
so as to begin to enjoy the fullness of life. You know, I always say, you know, many a times I've seen my dad beating up my mother.
Mm-hmm.
But seldom is an understatement, I've never seen him kissing her in front of us.
Yeah.
And that on its own has left me with narrow of understanding of what it is to be a man,
mm-hmm,
and what it is to be a loving husband to your partner.
Yeah.
You know, but thanks, you know, to this profound feminist theologian whom I came across with at UWC. After incarceration, I went to University of the Western Cape in 1991, you know, studied theology there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember on my fourth year level, my focus was on sexism in the church.
Yeah.
And it helped me, you know, and that kind of encounter with this feminist theologian, it helped me to understand what it is, I mean, to begin to redefine what it is to be a man.
Yes.
And how do I begin to relate to my own immediate sisters? How do I begin to relate to my immediate colleagues who are women?
Mm-hmm.
How do I begin to see to other mothers in the society? You know? And that on its own has helped me to recollect my broken pieces and begin to enjoy the fullness of life. And hence I'm saying to you, the work that I'm doing is the second phase of my struggle.
Mm-hmm.
1994, we patiently, all of us as South African, stood in long queues. One goal, to vote for a democratic, non-sexist country. Mm-hmm. And a non-violent country, for that matter. That on its own, we got the power for election. They're done and dusted. But when we look back, women in our country are not free. Free at the hands of men. And I'm going to qualify what I'm saying. Free at the hands of men.
Mm-hmm.
We are not free, all of us, at the hands of men. I'm going to give you a simple case study. We have experienced load shedding across, yes, the country, even in the Western Cape. When we walk the streets of Cape Town, even at this hour,
mm-hmm,
with their lights, and there's a woman walking behind you, you are less threatened. But when there's a man walking behind you, you start thinking twice,
mm-hmm,
getting scared at the melt. Same applies to me as a man. When I walk the main road,
yes,
and there's a woman behind me, I just get relaxed.
Yes.
Nothing is going to happen. But when there's a man coming behind me, I start getting what's going to happen, position myself.
Yeah.
What does that mean to all of us? It means that we're not safe. At whose hands? At the hands of men.
Mm-hmm.
Men think about their own safety only when they land in prison. So therefore, that suggests that women are not free in the outside walls of correctional centers, in their own household.
Yeah.
They're imprisonment, you know. So who's holding those keys to their freedom is men. So for me, this kind of journey,
mm-hmm,
has been that kind of a journey to say, I cannot relax up until the dreams that our mothers, the foremothers before us, the forefathers before us, who had a dream for a non-racial, non-sexist, non-violent South Africa, is being realized. So that's why I'm here. I spend my quality time of my family with the rest of South Africans, rest of Africans, rest yes. with the people of the world, because mm-hmm. I do this across the globe. Passion as am I in ensuring that gender justice is being realized by everyone and is being enjoyed in our lifetime.
And I think, wow, you know, one needs to commend the intention that you have. And I'm thinking of if we you know, placing it within religious milieu and understanding, sure. then, you know, we will understand that with all the religions coming from God, God would have made it, you know, incumbent upon himself to be just to all creation.
Absolutely.
And that we as human beings are not allowed to be unjust towards each other. But I'd want to come back to what is very interesting, and I mean, our discussion is to encourage people and ourselves to think about what is our responsibility and how do we understand gender justice. And I'd like to get to that question. For now, I just want to ask you, very often a person, and it could be a man or a woman,
sure.
when spoken about gender injustices, you know, abuse, etc., then a person could will very often say, I'm only one person, so what can I do to change the world? And therefore, you know, it's kind of like, let me not. It's what's the worth? I'm not even going to try.
Smart.
And then Sonke comes up with one man can. Please explain.
Absolutely. That was the kind of a living hope. That was the kind of a challenge to every person in South Africa and beyond the shores of South Africa to say, don't say you are alone. On your own, you can make a difference. But the truth of the matter is, we know that. In the streets where we reside, you know, when I'm cleaning my own house as a man, because patriarchy demands of me not to clean my house,
mm-hmm.
I make sure that I lock the gate, close the curtains or the blinds, so that my neighbor does not see me. And my very neighbor is doing the same thing,
mm-hmm.
you know. And we are saying, you know what, come out, because there's more goodness in us as men. Let's come out. You know, and begin to express the fullness of life,
yeah.
and begin to express the humanity in us as men. You know, because we are human before we are being seen as men. So for me, yeah. that's very, very important that, you know, as men and as human beings, we can do more. But that kind of a journey begins with the one person. When mm-hmm. you count, you start from one.
Yes.
Then you add one, for one plus one is two. Mm-hmm. And it becomes the multitude ultimately,
yeah.
because you started somewhere. So I'm saying, for those of us who are hopeless against this situation, in your own, you can make a difference. You know, we've got pockets and pockets of community action teams.
Mm-hmm.
And those community action teams starts from the number six, number seven of people who are actually sharing the same common ideas
yes.
around gender justice. To say, you know what is it that we can do in our own community?
Mm-hmm.
Be it a policing forum, be it a school governing body, be it a healthcare clinic committee where we reside, what is it that we can do to ensure that the lenses of gender
yes.
are actually being realized in that space?
Okay.
So for us, more than moaning and complaining, let us act mm-hmm. and do something. One man can, it's about compelling individuals, regardless of their gender, to come forward and be counted. And that on its own becomes a ripple effect, like the waters of the sea, changing and making this powerful change in the country.
I think it's wonderful, and I'm just thinking in terms of one man can, and you're thinking of there is one father in the house, and that is one man. There is one mother in this house.
Absolutely.
And it's one woman, and this is where change starts.
Absolutely.
So, and really, really, this is such a lovely conversation that I'm enjoying myself thoroughly. Patrick, understanding the terms gender justice.
Absolutely.
What do we understand? Well, what are you saying?
Well, the term is self-explanatory, but let's take the trouble so that everyone understand what we're talking about.
Yeah, like in the lived sense, what is it?
Well, we're talking about a stadia where everyone is on the equal wavelength in the fullness of the terms. We're talking about human beings living in unison but equal to one another. That's the kind of study that we're talking about. Remember, gender is a social construct.
Mm-hmm.
You know that men are expected to be doing this. But we are saying, get out of that kind of social construct. Live your life to the fullest as a human being,
mm-hmm.
right? And begin to see the opposite of what the society expects of you as a man. Because as currently, you are being viewed in the lenses of the society, that in your own as a woman, what we are defined as what society expects of you as a woman, then you're being boxed. And that on its own is not fair and it's not correct. It puts more pressure on us as men. It puts more pressure on women in a very, very large scale. Because especially in an era of HIV and AIDS, in the context of gender-based violence, you know, that's why men are not coming out for HIV tests, simple thing. You know, that's why men are not actually even present in primary healthcare settings, because they see that as being less of a man, because society expects of men to be strong,
mm-hmm.
machismo, macho men, strong men. And that's why I said initially, before I'm being seen as a man, I'm a human being.
Mm-hmm.
So when I get to the space, I am actually presenting this human being that is called Patrick, that is not well. And for me, that's very, very important. But also, these social norms and gender norms that are prescribed, defines who we are as men, are very detrimental to us. Because once I am seen as this man, it means that I'm the one who decides at home what to be eaten today. It is me who decide when to have sex and how to have sex and where to have sex, you know. And as a lesser being, you've got no say in that. So the notion of equality is not there. And that's why we see large scale of women in Africa and across the globe living with the virus HIV.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we see so many people in marriage life being infected with the virus HIV, simply because they are being seen as one of the objects in the family, one of the assets in the family, but not being seen as equal partners.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue around gender justice is to bring together all these genders together, but live in unison and in harmony to one another. Central to gender justice is equality.
Mm-hmm.
Because I need to see you before I look at you as a woman. I must first recognize the fact that you are a full human being. Then the rest follows.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is that, and important in that process would be, I need to respect and regard and appreciate.
Absolutely.
And then we know, so how do we live together with a sense of justice?
Absolutely, absolutely. And the absence of gender justice is gender injustice.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, why we are in this quagmire is the whole history of patriarchy,
mm-hmm.
and the patriarchal system. You will remember, if you look at the term patriarchy, the Hebrew term derived from the term called manash, a male-dominated society,
mm-hmm.
where men are dominating. And that's why, if you look at my own background in terms of my own religion, Christianity, most pieces of scripture, they promote men. What we hear about women, less good sort about them. And they are, in fact, non-existent.
I just ask you,
sure.
because this is very, very interesting from the point of view of, if you are now wanting gender justice,
sure.
to prevail.
Absolutely.
And now, but you're speaking to people who are Christian and Muslim and
Hindu
and
African traditional
Jewish
religion.
And yes. And so there is a religion, or there is a culture, and much of that is held with patriarchy. How does one, in your pursuing of gender justice, help to shift the attitude? Because that's where one has to, on a thinking level, before you even get to spreading the word and doing the actions, etc. There need to be a shift in attitude.
Every religion strives for social justice,
mm-hmm.
which is equal to gender justice, which is equal to equality. Every religion at the center, at the heart of every religion, is that. And I'm glad that we are bringing this, because at Song we're using the spectrum of change.
Mm-hmm.
The journey of change begins at an individual level. And once you start that engaging that individual, and a very, 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 I'm glad that you're making this example about us religious persons. At the religious level, who are the gatekeepers? The imams in the mosque, the fathers in the church, the chiefs in the traditional African religion. Those are the gatekeepers. But once you begin to engage those, you begin to see that at the center, at the heart of this religion, is social justice. Muhammad speaks about social justice. Jesus speaks about social justice. All this is about social justice. And for me, at an individual level, you then move to community at large, right? Because once the community and a group of people in that particular community are knowledgeable, you will find shift in terms of their own behavior, right? It's very, very important. And once you begin to see that kind of shift in their own behavior and doing of things, then there's increased knowledge unto them. It makes them to begin to do things differently. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you a very simple example in the field of HIV. People way back, they didn't see the issue of knowing their status as important. But today, because people that the best way to know and to defeat HIV and AIDS is to know your status. Everyone, once they get increased information and all these demystified myths around HIV, they begin to say, I want to test and know my status. Mm-hmm. And once they begin to know their status, they move forward, right? And in that, because one thing that is important is that knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. Once you have that knowledge, you are having the power and a will to say, I want to change my own immediate behavior.
And so on that, I just want to touch on that, sure. You know, and come in there. What you're really describing is accountability to the self first. And I just want to read to you some messages that, sure, we've received, because I think, you know, it's really conversations that I'd like to include it in the little, sure, time that we have left over. So the first message has been, and it greets you. Hello, Patrick. Thank you for honoring us women and human beings in the true sense of the word. Real insight into life and how we should interact as human beings. God bless. We salute you. And then it goes on to say, but I like the fact that you're balancing it out in all fairness. Yes, God has created us with a brain and it enables us to make choices. I think the next message that had come through is, this is the one that I'd like to read. It says, does gender injustice in a Muslim marriage also go back to the male upbringing in a family or a repetition of how parents treated each other? And what a beautiful example. I mean, you have actually described your own example, but please let's just speak about when there's been an upbringing. Does it, you know, what do we now do? What's our responsibility now? I've grown up in a house where perhaps there's been gender injustice. How do I now, you know, look at my own behavior?
First, let me give you that 10 minutes. I'll rearrange things.
Oh, thank you so much.
You see, this is a very important question. Socialization, at times, drives us to be who we are ultimately.
So the learned experience. Absolutely. I watched my father and therefore I think this is how it needs to be done.
The likelihood is that I emulate my father.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
The whole notion of absent fathers on this current day and age in South Africa is the reflection of the non-existent and the absence of fathers in our own lives due to migrant labor system and other forms of injustices in our own society. Very, very important. So let me just say this one. The fact that you are exposed to gender violence, to all forms of violence, including domestic violence, the likelihood, and I'm not saying in every aspect, in every instance, it would tend to be that, but the likelihood is that you will tend to be like that. Mm-hmm. But the truth of the matter is, if you happen to meet a kind of shift, you know, on how you do things, on how you engage, then that on its own presents an opportunity of a paradigm shift. You do things differently. I've given you, as a stranger, my own journey of life. I've spoken about the what we sometimes call it's confidential. For me, it's who am I? It's where I'm coming from.
It's opening the blinds so that the world can see your sense of justice.
Absolutely. And for me, that on its own is that such situations are not the end on its own. But the truth of the matter is that kind of understanding can be changed. And that's why we are exactly using every opportunity that presents itself to us as Songe to engage our people.
And I think it comes back to, like you explained, so a person has grown up in a family where there was gender injustice, where, parents, the especially the male dad has treated mom very badly and so on. But you know, I also feel when you take on, and again, one gets to one man can. So that one man, that one person, at some stage of your life, you're going to have to sit down and think about your own life and think about how you define yourself and the conversations. Or who are you going to? And I'm just thinking about parents who are always saying to children, choose the friends you have. You know you need to choose better friends because therefore, they're going to impact on you positively. But, do we as parents sometimes stop and say, do I think about who I am and what I'm doing and how I conduct my life? How accountable am I to myself as, heads of this family?
You know, what I normally say to many parents, in our country, outside our country, and across the globe, children hear less of what we say. They see more of what we do.
Absolutely.
That's the message that I want to respond to that scenario.
Yes.
So for me, I'm saying we can do more as parents, but modeling a positive behavior is, for me, very fundamental.
Yeah.
That on its own will leave lasting memories, of what it is to be a parent. And again, I want to say to you, maybe in our own human terms, we see each other as heads of the family. I'm the member of the family. Because when I'm a member of the family, I don't want to be seen as the head of the family. Because this notion of being head of the family, it's really, really detrimental to us as men. When you're the head of the family, everything is upon you to decide. When there is no bread, you must make sure that you make the bread available. In a country where there are high levels of unemployment, you are putting this unnecessary pressure on men to say, men are the providers, men are the heads of the family. I see myself as the member of the family. And as the member of the family, every individual in my family matters. If we were to discuss the monthly budget, my kids must understand that mom and dad are providing money in the family. Hence, I refuse to be called as a provider because you are working as my partner. You are bringing also provision in the family. Mm-hmm. We sit down and begin to say, in this month, difficult for us, we will survive, by grace. And unto that, every member sees that if my son, my daughter wants to have Nike takis or Adidas, then you see that but the budget does not allow as a member of the family. But once you are putting this unnecessary tag to me that I'm the head of the family, even if I don't have substance in my big head, because most of us sometimes we want to have this tag of being seen as the head. In other communities, on say it as his boss, that on its own, it's coming from the patriarchal notion that men should be on top all the time. Men must decide. For me, I want us to decide as the family so that I don't have headache ultimately, because most heads of the family are presenting headaches in their own families. Mm-hmm. So for me, I see myself as the member of the family, and in that, I want to make sure that I devolve issues of power. Everyone in a house must see that is having a role to play. Everyone is important. Everyone has a power in our own family. We can never be complete without our own children. I can never be complete without my partner. That is very, very important. Mm-hmm. But that's a journey that needs to be lived, demonstrated wholeheartedly, and in all fairness, demonstrate it. So
So I think, and what you're alluding to is, it needs to play itself out in the lived experience of every person.
Absolutely.
In the family. It's a very interesting conversation to have against the background of, for example, Islam says, and I think, you know, there is the understanding of even the Christianity that says the man is supposed to be the provider of his family. But then you also see the evolvement of society, and you also see how men and women have to go to work, and men and women have to take care of families, etc., etc. So families can look very different to the perfect idea of how it looked, you know. But I want to come back to
just before you move out of that one, and that on its own, it takes away the caring and the care aspect from us as men. And we see the issue of care work and care aspect as the element of women. Mm-hmm. And for me, I've got a heart. I've got feelings. Caring is upon me. And I don't have to import my sisters when you as my partner, you are not well. I must take care of you, mm-hmm. as you will take care of me. So that on its own, for me, it's very, very important. And this is what we want every person in every society to say. This is the kind of a new fever that we want to present and spread throughout, so that this change can benefit all of us. There's more inequality than inequality.
So I just want to ask you, power.
Yes.
Would you say that the need to have power would be a huge barrier to gender justice? You know, if the need for power, and if you look at the world, then if you're looking at the leaders of the world, for example, the governments of the world, for example, then you see that this is how it appears to us as laypersons, that there is such a need for power. How does power relate to gender justice? If you're wanting gender justice, do you also have to go and push for, I need to be in a position of power?
You know, that absolute power corrupts. It creates all the demagogues that we're seeing in our own society at this point in time. The whole dream of a democratic South Africa is gone, long gone, because of power. So for me, we need to share power. You know, all of us, we need power, but this power needs to be shared equally amongst each other. And what do I simply mean by that? You know, I must recognize that in a relationship, if I'm relating to my partner Toko, by the way, my partner is Toko. If I'm relating to Toko, how do I relate to her? It's important. It's the same fashion that I would want her to respect me. That's the same respect I give to her. Mm-hmm. And in that, and I'm consciously saying and doing it so that my children, 24-year-old and a 10-year-old, begin to see how do we relate to one another. As a family, so that when they go out of those walls that we live in called home, they can demonstrate the same respect, the same love to their own peers in their own relationships as well, ultimately. And this world can be a better place to be. Mm-hmm. And for me, that's the fundamental drive of Sonke in ensuring that we're presenting this a fair and a just society. Mm-hmm. But I want to go back to what we're talking about around starting from individual to broader community.
Yes.
And once the communities are knowledgeable of their own rights, of their own power, because knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. But if you equip society with knowledge, we are giving them power. All of us in the peninsula, we are inundated by levels of crime, levels of violence. But what can we do as society? Come together as a neighborhood watch that is non-violent, but addressing issues of criminality in our own spaces. And that we can do. Make sure that we work very close with the police services, and police are doing their own jobs correctly. That's the notion. And I'm giving you a typical example. Issue here. That is injustice that confronts us is the issue of crime and violence in our own communities. And I'm saying, when we are together as a society, we say we are going to watch our own neighborhood, make sure who comes in, who brings what in our own community. We work very close with the police without being violent. We're not going to arrest them, but we call the police to do the arrest, but monitor who comes in our own society. That we can do. Mm-hmm. I've seen a number of communities doing that. Same yes. applies to our own defunct schools, particularly mm-hmm. in our own townships. You know, why are we not participating as intellectuals? Why not participate as professionals in those schools where we are actually attending at primary level to say, I'm here to pay back? Make sure that the school governing body is strengthened so that the governance of our own schools is better. Because once we have a better governance in our own school, the better for us. Mm-hmm. It starts from an individual right to community, and that on its own we can bring that change mm-hmm. that we want to see in our own society. Mahatma Gandhi says, once said, if you want to see the change, be that change
you wish to see in the world. And I want to come back to, and thank you so much for that, Patrick. Sure. I want to come back to on a probably, and I have only 4 minutes left over for this discussion, on almost a more simplistic level
sure.
that I often see. Now, the one man can,
Shmai.
So one family can.
One person, one family.
Right. So very, very often the shift has to, in my mind, the shift has to come within that one person, within that one family.
Sure.
How we socialize Absolutely. Our girls and our boys, you know, you have a function, all the hard work is done by the ladies. When all the cooking is done, who does all the washing up? And the men just sit there, and then they say, I'd like to have 2 sugars in my tea, please. And you kind of think, really, no? But it comes from our brothers, our fathers, our brothers, and now it's spilling over onto our sons. When are we going to stop the injustice that you see happening in your home, even on that level of respect and regard? Like you said, we've put ourselves in boxes. And we continue with the socialization, and it has that patriarchal spin on it.
Absolutely. You know, the gender norms are being actually socialized and being actually educated over a period of time to all of us. We've been told, act like a man, act like a woman. You know, that on its own is boxing you. You know, and so that you can fit into this man's world with this patriarchal society. And for me, I'm saying the journey and the work of song is about gender norms transformation. If we can speak to the leaders of the powerful spaces of socialization to begin to understand the essence of their own entity in society, I've said it's about social justice. Where there is no injustice, even including gender injustice.
Mm-hmm.
If you work with those spaces, very, very important. And fresh from the conference of the Methodist women in Southern Africa, they were coming from South Africa, Botswana, Mozambique, Namibia, in East London. I was one of the speakers there. And I said, I know that we are called women of faith. But you must be women of faith with action. If a sister comes to you at a prayer session presenting with a blue eye, it's good to pray, but address that blue eye
mm-hmm.
as to where is it coming from
yeah.
so that it does not resurface again. Mm-hmm. Because we need to cut the cycle of violence as it comes to us. That for me, it's very, very important to be a sister's keeper and to be a brother's keeper in all forms. I don't have to entertain derogatory jokes made about our sisters and our partners by other men. I must stand up and hold that friend of mine accountable.
Mm-hmm.
For me, time demands of that we begin to hold each other accountable.
And I think on that note, you know, we have 1 minute left over in which we're going to conclude this program. Mm. I think it's the thought that one wants to leave this discussion. There are more SMSs
sure.
that had come through. My next program is called VOC SOS Helpline, and I can address the messages that had come through.
Sure.
And I think, you know, it's wonderful messages, what one... what we strive, what Sonke Gender Justice is striving to do, is looking at that gender norms transformation, thinking transformation, attitude, you know, paradigm shifts. And I see this in the messages coming through. So it's really, really great. So Patrick Godana, thank you, thank you, thank you so much. It was great to speak with you this evening.
Pleasure is mine. And I want to conclude by saying, no one is born violent. Violence is a learned behavior. And if it's a learned behavior, we can unlearn and come up with the other behavior.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
I thank you so much and all the best. So we'll chat again next week. Afwan, you're welcome.
Inshallah.
So, of course, that concludes this part of the program. I've been speaking to Patrick Godana, who is in the position of Menke Government and Media Management and is in the also represents the organization Sonke Gender Justice.